May the Lord breathe upon us today, and that breath that He gives us, that we would return it to Him in praise and in worship, that we would speak His word back to Him in praise and worship and in prayer, and that we would speak that word to each other, to build each other up in the faith. I have to tell you, something happened up here this morning that has not happened before for me. Nobody noticed it except for me, but it touched my heart, and it really reminded me how much we need each other. As Michael was blessing Troy, JC came up behind him and put his hands upon him. Now, ladies, what we do when the men get up here and we lay hands on each other when for the reading of the Torah, we lean our weight on them as if to let them know, hey, the weight of this is on you. And as we were doing that, JC was standing behind him, and he put his forehead on Troy's back, and he said, "Brother, we're depending on you." I'm telling you, that was precious. We depend on one another, because together we do this in strength. Let's take the greatest book ever written and make our declaration. Hafokba, hafokba, dekolaba, hafokba, hafokba, mashiachba. Turn it and turn it, for everything is in it. Turn it and turn it, for the Messiah is in it. He is. He is. And He is this word come to life. You know, it makes me think again about in the book of Numbers, where it talks about if a husband thinks his wife has been unfaithful and they go before the priest and she has to drink the dust from the floor of the tabernacle, and have to, before they do that, the priest writes out the name of God. He writes it out. And they pour it over that, and he scrapes the name of God. And God allows His name to be obliterated. Whew. Because He wants the covenant relationship to be that strong. And when God sent His image, Yeshua, He was obliterated because we had been an unfaithful bride. And so, JC, that ministered to me this morning. We depend on each other, and we walk this out together. What a great morning. Let's go ahead and make our next one. For every good and acceptable sacrifice, there is a divine response. So we are this week beginning one of my favorite books, the book of Shemot, otherwise known as the book of Exodus. Now, you know, when we get finished with Shemot, we get into my very favorite book. And when we get there, when we get to Leviticus, I'm going to ask you how many would say that Leviticus is your favorite book now. I'm hoping to see a few more hands go up. Every year there gets to be one or two more hands that go up. I'm telling you, it's rich. It's great. Messiah is right there in the middle of Leviticus. Everything about it. So we're in Parshat Shemot. I want to go back just a little bit back into Genesis, okay? Now, we all know Joseph was sold into slavery. He was mistreated. All these bad things had happened to him. And then he got accused by Potiphar's wife, thrown into jail, and it just went from bad to worse to worse to worse. And then suddenly, because Pharaoh had some dreams, Joseph was brought up from the dungeon, and within a matter of minutes went from being a lowly slave to the second most powerful man in the world. And you remember also, his brothers came, and his brothers looked at him. We don't know who this guy is. He's some stranger. Had no idea they were looking upon their blood brother. Just like when Israel saw Yeshua the first time. We don't know who you are. Some did. But when they, just like the second time they came and Joseph revealed himself, Yeshua is going to reveal himself the second time. And they're going to say, our brother, our king. So, Joseph told them the second time. Quiz time. How many years of famine were left when they saw him the second time? Oh, well done. 5 years of famine left. Okay. So we know that God had placed Joseph where he was for their deliverance. Here's another question for you. I like to ask questions here lately. What happened once the drought was over? The famine. Anybody got the answer? What happened after the famine was over? Yep, the Hebrews moved into Egypt, and there they became a nation. Okay? But it's like that old song from the early, mid-70s. Time is making change, changes. Oh, Lord, forgive me for singing David Bowie. That's good. That's good. So, things would begin to change after the famine was over. Things weren't going to stay the same, and the question is why? We're going to look into these things today. And I want to start by looking at Exodus 1:1-5. And these are the names of the sons of Israel who were coming to Egypt with Jacob. Each came with his household, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The total number of persons that were Jacob's issue came to 70, Joseph being already in Egypt. How many of you are looking at your translation of this right now? How many of your translations start with the word and? Do any of you have a translation where it starts with and? Well, I want to show you, this is how it starts in Hebrew. Vele Shemot. And these are the names. Now, why in the world would it start with and? This is a strange way to start a book. Because it's a continuation of what had already happened in Genesis. And this is very important. Even the word and here in Scripture, tying it to stuff that had happened before, is very important because it will help to explain some of these changes that were going on. And so, you know, here they are. Joseph revealed himself. Pharaoh said, go get them, son. Go bring them in. Tell them to come on in. Send wagons. Give them the very best of everything. And so Joseph and others went, and they led them in, said, come on, let's go. Things were looking up. After all of the bad stuff, after Jacob and Esau and all these other things, and after the brothers sold Joseph and all these things, things are looking up and things are going to be great. They are. Well, so the sons of Israel came in. By the way, something else I want to show you. And these were the names of the sons of Israel who were coming to Egypt with Jacob. Each came with his household. Even in that sentence, you see something has started to happen. As long as they were still in the land that was promised to them, it was Jacob and his sons. But now that they're coming to Egypt, it's not just Jacob and his boys anymore. It's Jacob and his sons who became households. This is a very important distinction. Not only were they their own household, they were beginning to form their own families, to form a distinction between who they were and their brothers, even though they were still one family. Now, this gets to be a big deal, and it gets to be important later, and I better stick close to my notes or I'm going to start chasing rabbits. So, in Canaan, there was trouble. They had to move away from Shechem because Levi and Shimon had gone in and killed a whole lot of the people of Shechem because of what happened to their sister Dinah. And Jacob said, boys, we've got to get out of here. People are going to gather up and they're going to kill us. And so they left, but and it became a very different matter in Egypt. Isn't this a little odd? In the promised land, it was Jacob and the boys. They leave the promised land, and it's Jacob and the sons of Israel, each with his own household. That, you know, we thought those kinds of things were supposed to be established in the land. Things don't always work the way that we think that they should, though. So, they came in very few in number, but linked to Joseph. Aha! You're going to get the best land in all of Egypt. You're going to get to watch out over Pharaoh's cattle. You're going to do all of these things. You boys that used to be just shepherds, now you're coming in. And because you're linked to Joseph, you're going to be treated like royalty. You guys are very, very, very special. And after all, there was still a famine going on. And if Joseph was going to be that great a benefit to us, now all of his brothers, well, they're going to be a great benefit to us as well. So, yeah, you guys are welcome. Man, y'all come on in. Everything is great. Pharaoh viewed them very favorably. Egypt said, you're the mensch. Okay, for those of you who don't know, mensch is a Yiddish word which means upstanding men. Kind of a play on, no, never mind. Never mind. It doesn't matter. But isn't there always a however? Problems began to arise because time is making change. Changes. Because eventually the famine was going to come to an end. And then what? We're back in good shape now. As a matter of fact, you remember during the famine, what happened to the people of Egypt? They became slaves to Pharaoh. Well, now, this is a little curious, because God told Moses, I'm going to make life miserable on Pharaoh and upon the Egyptians, and when they leave, they're going to give you silver and gold and all sorts of stuff, and they're going to run you out. Well, if they're slaves, are they going to have silver and gold? By this time, the Egyptians are no longer slaves. Changes. So if the Egyptians are no longer slaves and there's no longer any famine and everything is back to normal, well, maybe they're not quite as big a deal as they had been before. And not only that, but Joseph had kind of put himself in a tough spot. So here was Joseph all alone in Egypt. Now, let's just make sure that we understand. Joseph was alone in Egypt. Tell me, how many of us, if we were sent away somewhere out away from everybody associated with our faith, Messianic, Christian, Hebrew roots, anybody who was associated with our faith, and we were put in a place where there was nobody who worshiped our God, how hard would it be to hold on to what we have walked in? It would be very, very difficult. Joseph had no choice. Joseph went it alone. We got a choice today. We don't dare go it alone, or we're going to end up in trouble. So he maintained his faith, and he maintained his witness while he was oppressed. Now let that one sink in for a minute. He maintained his faith, and he maintained his witness while he was oppressed. Time is making change, changes, because we're going to see here in a minute. Well, it didn't always stay exactly that way. Some things in scriptures began to point out there were some problems here with Joseph. For example, you remember when, before he revealed himself to his brothers, he brought them back after the cup was gone, and the cup was in Benjamin's bag. What did he tell them? That's my goblet that I use for divination. Oh, Witchcraft. But Joseph had maintained his witness as long as he was oppressed and under persecution. Now, let's just make everything, for those of you who don't know the history of Egypt, probably Joseph did not use it himself. Because back then, if you were of the Egyptian royalty, you didn't mess around with stuff like that. But you had magicians who would come and they would do all, you remember Pharaoh, call all the magi and everything else. Joseph probably was not doing it, but he had it at his disposal. And he told his brothers, that's mine that's used for divination. So just maybe some of what had been going on had started to rub off on Joseph, especially while he was not oppressed and he was out there on his own with nobody around him to support him spiritually. So another problem. Here was Joseph, who had been sold into slavery, who saved Egypt from starvation, and the people came to him, and he said, all right, you hungry? Give me your cattle. Hungry? Give me your land. And finally it got to the point, this man who knew slavery, who knew the bitterness of slavery, and who knew the horrors of slavery, said, okay, now you want to eat, you're going to be Pharaoh's slaves. I want to ask a hard question here. Was that sin on Joseph's part? That's kind of a hard thing to answer. I can tell you, I look at that and I think, oh, man, if anybody should have known not to do that, that should have been you. Opinion. So, it got to the point to where Joseph was not only in Egypt. Egypt had gotten to be very firmly in Joseph as well. And I think if we look around, we see that Egypt has crept into the body of Messiah today. There are now pastors of churches who claim to be atheists, and they're keeping their positions. There are pastors in churches who are married to somebody of the same gender, and they're keeping their positions. Egypt has crept in, and it's got to get out. So, famine lasted only 5 more years, and children came to Egypt, and things began to change then and there. And to quote another old song from the 70s, they should have known what was going on because there were signs everywhere, signs. Let's see, some of you know that song. How many of you know that song? Just said, okay, good, okay. How many of you are thinking, oh boy, I'm not going to admit to knowing that song? Oh, you know them both. Yeah, I do too. So now, instead of me just standing up here talking about these things, I'm just going to read to you a list of scriptures. And I want you to see this progression of things getting worse and worse and worse. Genesis 41:44. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I, Pharaoh, decree that without your approval, no one is to raise his hand or his foot in all the land of Egypt. Hey, you don't get any higher than that. Genesis 45:8. So it was not you who sent me here, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh, Lord of all his household and ruler over the whole land of Egypt. Man, he's riding high here. Genesis 45:16. The report of this reached Pharaoh's house. Joseph's brothers have come, and Pharaoh and his servants were pleased. And then Genesis 45:17. Pharaoh said to Joseph, tell your brothers, here is what you were to do. Load up your animals, go to the land of Canaan. And that's to bring them back. Everything's great. Genesis 50:4-5. This is where things kind of start getting a little funny. When the period of mourning was over, Joseph addressed to the household of Pharaoh. This is after Jacob died. I would like to ask a favor. Tell Pharaoh. Okay, hang on a minute. Jacob's dead. Joseph wants to go and bury his father in the land. And he does not even get to go and tell Pharaoh. He has to send somebody to speak to him. So it says it right here. I would like to ask a favor. Tell Pharaoh, my father made me swear an oath. He said, I'm going to die. You were to bury me in my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan. Therefore, I beg you, let me go up and bury my father. I will return. He could not even look Pharaoh in the face and say that to him. This is a big deal. Genesis 50, 7 and 8. So Joseph went up to bury his father. With him and all of Pharaoh's servants, the leaders of his household and the leaders of the land of Egypt. Along with the entire household of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's household, only their little ones, their flocks, and their cattle did they leave in the land of Goshen. And here's a real big telling. Moreover, there went up with him both chariots and horsemen. It was a very large caravan. Here he was, the second most powerful man in the world. And now he has to send somebody to ask Pharaoh, can I go bury my father? Yeah, you can go. And we're going to send military people with you. And your children can't go. Something's happening. It's not good. So, yeah, things changed. And Joseph no longer needed to save Egypt. Seems to have lost his status now some. But, okay. Another old song, Bob Dylan. The times, they are a-changing. I don't do this all the time, by the way, for those of you who are visiting, just every once in a while. So, in Egypt, Israel became a people. They were not a nation. They came into Egypt, and they became a nation. But they had also grown very, very comfortable. Hey, everything was good there. But what happened to Joseph would eventually fall on them as well, and all Israel, and it would get worse. And there were two reasons. First, God had to show his power and his might. When does God show his power and his might? Unless there's trouble. It happens some, but most of the time when God demonstrates his power and his might, it's either for the sanctification of his name and to pour out love upon his people, or is to show everybody else, I'm the one true God. You better pay attention. And that's what happened with the plagues. So, not only that, they had grown very comfortable in Goshen, and God said, there's a covenant waiting for you, and the covenant is not here in Egypt. The covenant is elsewhere. And he had promised Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, this is going to be your land. They couldn't stay in Egypt. And, of course, we know that all of this would eventually lead to, starts with a P, Passover. It would lead to Passover. So, Exodus chapter 1, verses 8 and 10, I want to show you this. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph, and he said to his people, look, the Israelite people are much too numerous for us. Let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they increase. Hold on. Wait. They're much too numerous for us. Let's deal shrewdly with them, lest they increase. Something seems a little funny here. The Hebrew is going to unlock the mystery there, and I'll show that to you in just a minute. So, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they increase. Otherwise, in the event of war, they may join our enemies in fighting against us and rise up and leave the land. So I have a question for you. They came in 70 people. Anybody want to take a guess as about how many Egyptians there were? It wasn't 70. It was millions and millions and millions of Egyptians. So how many years does it take to go from 70 to millions and millions? It takes a very, very, very long time. The Hebrew here is going to unlock the mystery for us. The Jews did not outnumber the Egyptians. That's not it at all, okay? So, the most powerful nation on earth, much more numerous than Israel, and this is what it says here. Look, the Israelite people are much too numerous for us, but what it says here is, Vayomer el amo hine am b'nei Yisrael rav va'atzom mimenu. What it really says is the people sons of Israel are great and lifted up above us. It's not that they outnumbered them. They were starting to recognize, okay, these people are the ones who saved us from the famine through their brother, and we're in good shape again. But now they weren't just a group. Now they are Am B'nei Yisrael. They are the nation of the sons of Israel. So what's really going on here is the Egyptians are recognizing these people are becoming a nation now. How would he know? By the way, it's a new Pharaoh, incidentally. It says a new Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. How would this new Pharaoh know they're a nation and they're not one of us? Obviously, if they had been like the Egyptians, if they'd been like Joseph at first, they would have dressed like the Egyptians. They would have talked like the Egyptians. And they would have walked, okay. In other words, they would have started to look and act and deal and worship and everything else just like the Egyptians. The Jewish people didn't even intermarry. Very, very, very few married Egyptians. And when the Egyptians married in, they became like those people. So Pharaoh was taking a look and he said, there's something very special about this group and it scares me. Okay? And so, in other words, Israel was starting to look like a peculiar people, as it says in the New Covenant Scriptures. And so, he was starting to get a little bit worried. There's something going on about this. The sons of Jacob stayed to themselves. And I want to tell you, when God's people are walking in righteousness, what is the result on the unrighteous? Come on, it says in Deuteronomy. God says, say it again. Conviction. And not only conviction, but if they reject the conviction, God says, I'll strike fear in their hearts. The Egyptians began to get a little bit afraid of this new Yisrael, these new people of Israel, this nation that was starting to form. And so the new king and the Egyptians said, there's only one thing to do. We got to knock them down some. And by the way, you notice they didn't want Israel to leave. This is an odd thing. We don't want you people to leave. Why would they not want them to leave? Well, they saw that they were blessed. We want your blessing, and we want to benefit from your being here, but we're also afraid of you. So we're going to make sure that you can't do anything to us. In other words, Israel was in Egypt, but not of Egypt. So I have a fair question to ask here. And again, I want to say, in our very first meeting, I said, we are not going to criticize our brothers and sisters in the church. Not going to do it. Because we are, after all, different day of the week, and we kind of walk it out different, but we are family. We are one people. But is it fair to look at the body of Messiah today and say, are we unified? Are we a people? Somebody? We don't look it. As a matter of fact, if you get on social media, you see all sorts of arguments and meanness and everything else. People of faith, our brothers and sisters, getting on there and starting arguments back and forth and just cannibalizing each other. So the world looks at us and says, you people aren't unified. Heaven forbid. Just observant, not critical. So There's a lot of taking up the culture. Not only in the body of Messiah, take up the culture. Let's start doing things their way. Not only the blatant sin, but even abomination. It's like having priests who are married to people of their own gender. It's okay. Who are we to judge? It's got to stop. And we want to make sure that we are in the world, but we're not of the world, because we're called to holiness and we're called to righteous living. We're called to get the Egypt out of our lives and to bring others out with us. We have to take up our cross and we have to sanctify the name of Yeshua. And it's like I said for the last several weeks, redemption never happens without pain. And redemption never happens where it's just all easy and everything else. Despite what a very famous person said a couple years back, you get saved and all your troubles are over with. It just doesn't happen that way. Egypt has crept in. And it shouldn't be. In essence, we have to be slaves to Yeshua, just like Paul wrote in several of his letters. Now, I will tell you this. America does have a history of respect for Christianity, has a respect for synagogues to an extent. Hey, chosen people of God throughout our history have pretty much honored the Judeo-Christian traditions and stuff. Messianic Judaism's not even a blip on the radar, really, but it's starting to grow. But we are starting to see that there's a turning. There are things happening. The signs, everywhere signs are out there. And we have to be like the tribe of Issachar. We have to understand the times and to know what's going on, because we've got to be prepared for these things. We have to hold our course. And by the way, it's not just here in America. It's also in historically Christian Europe. I'm telling you, Christians in Europe and Jews in Europe are really starting to go through it. As a matter of fact, I didn't tell y'all this morning. Y'all know Seth Klayman. His synagogue has been attacked twice recently. It's in North Carolina. He's a young man. It's a messianic synagogue. There have been people spray painting on it, people calling, ringing the doorbell and making threats, saying we're going to kill you and everything else. That in North Carolina. Heaven forbid. But it's happening. The signs are all around us. And so we know that trouble is brewing. And so now more than ever, like JC said, we're depending on you. We have got to depend on each other, and we got to walk this out together in the unity of the Spirit, in the bond of peace. Because Egypt is growing around us. But as Egypt grows around us, we have got to rise up and we've got to shine the light of Yeshua and to sanctify his name to push back the darkness. What did God tell Adam to do when he created him? He said, tend the garden. Doesn't seem to be very, very big deal. All right, so he's going to grow cucumbers and tomatoes for the Lord? That's not it. God put him in the garden. You remember, that was the first place where God took the chaos and started moving it back. And he told Adam, you do what I've done. God has made us partners in his work. We have to, like God started in Eden, we have to push back the chaos. You ever stop and think about that? That God has faith in us? I mean, after all, he has faith in us because he allowed us to know about Yeshua and salvation. And not only did he allow us to be saved, he also entrusted his Spirit to be put within us. So we just simply have to say, yes, sir, we're going to do with what you gave us, what you've called us to do. And we have to do it depending on each other and to do it in spirit of truth and the spirit of unity and the bond of peace. And that's all there is to it. So with all these bad things that are happening, well, think about the book of Judges for a minute. In the book of Judges, what got the people of Israel to repent and to unify? Was it a great harvest? It was trouble. Nothing but trouble. And so trouble's coming. You know, it's coming, and it's going to get worse. And it's okay. But we can't be like Joseph, who didn't have a choice. He stuck it out on his own. We've got to hold on to one another. We got to walk this out together and depend on each other. Brother, I'm telling you, that ministered to me when you said that. Thank you for saying that. That was good. So, if our lives as believers are comfortable, something's wrong. I'm going to say that again. If our lives as believers is comfortable, something is wrong. You remember when Yeshua quoted that it says, "Eat, drink, and be merry, for this night your life will be required of you." It's good for us to have joy. And we can have joy. As a matter of fact, when Shaul was locked up in prison, he and Barnabas were locked up in prison. They didn't grouse. They didn't kvetch. They didn't complain. They sang praises to the Lord. These are the signs of things we got to start being prepared for, because there's going to be a lot of people out there who are going to be looking for answers. And there are going to be a lot of people out there who are going to be looking for a light. Let your light shine, that others may see your good works. Wait a minute. Let your light shine so that others may see you're having a really good time in Messiah. No. Let your light shine that others may see your good works. We have to work to build the kingdom. And the signs, they just keep going. But we're going to do what the Lord has called us to do. So, okay. I kind of got off track for a little bit. So I'm going to skip some of it here. And I just want to go to John 10, 14 through 18. We know that as trouble comes, Yeshua said, "You in this world, you're going to have trouble. But take heart. Because I have overcome the world." So it's all right. And it's good that we know that we can trust our shepherd. John 10, 14 through 18, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I laid down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and they shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." So if he had authority to lay down his life and take it up again, and we're his sheep, what do we have to fear? Egypt grows around us. Yeah, as a matter of fact, how many of you have heard of Waleed Shubat? He said one time, if you don't have wolves nipping at your heels, you're not a sheep. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so, like Israel entering into Egypt, things in America are pretty good for now. But they're going to get worse. The spiritual darkness of the world increases, and the body of Messiah comes under attack. How dare you not accept anything and everything that comes down the pike? How dare you stand in judgment of people? Michael Petrie said something great one time. Let me back up. Michael Petrie has said several great things, many great things. We had... After Shabbat one day, we were set up for Oneg. I'd been teaching on the red heifer, and we had a visitor who didn't much like what I had to say. And he went to Michael. He said, "Well, what's your opinion on it?" And Michael said, "Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to give you the impression that I have an opinion." God's word is true. God's word is right. God's word is enduring, and it will never ever come to an end and you want a promise about our safety and our security in a dark world, find it right in here, because it's here. Nothing in this word is wrong. Yeah, I like that. Somebody just started quoting Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He restores my soul and leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." You know, it just doesn't get any better than that. So I want to close with Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through 16. You know, like I said, the world is getting darker, and God has called us to do this work of redemption. It's going to cost us. I mean, after all, God put Yeshua on the cross. When Yeshua was crucified, who was the high priest over that offering? It was the Father himself. And if it wasn't too much for his own son to be crushed and destroyed like that for our own good, hey, we can go through some bad times too. Because it's like Job said, "The Lord knows the way that I take. And when I come through this, I will come forth as gold." And that's just about as good as it gets. So I want to end with this, Matthew 5, 14 through 16. You know, he had already said, "I am the light of the world." And now look at what he tells his disciples. "You are a light for the world. A town built upon a hill cannot be hidden." Oh, I don't want to go out and share my testimony with people because, you know, I don't want anybody thinking that I'm judging. Oh, wow. We got the greatest thing in the world. We should be telling everybody. Likewise, when people light a lamp, they don't cover it with a bowl, but put it on a lampstand so that it shines for everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before people that they may see the good things you do and praise your Father in heaven. And as the days are approaching, we need to step it up. As the days are getting darker, we got to shine brighter. Whether it puts us in slavery or not, but we're going to have to do a song. We will not bow to other gods. We will serve no other faith. We're going to worship the Lord our God. And when he brings us out, he's going to lead us into the land that he has promised his people. You know, those of us who are Gentiles, we're going to get to have a place with them also. And so can we do one more song? Is that all right with everybody? Let's do it.